The views and opinions expressed on the following program are not necessarily those of the staff and management of Salem Media of Hawaii.
Welcome to Generations Radio, where the focus is on our seniors and their families. We are here each Saturday afternoon from 5 until 6 p.m., bringing you resourceful information with our radio team of professionals in the field of aging. Stay with us for the next 1 hour as we explore different ways to make life more exciting and meaningful for our extraordinary seniors, right here on AM 690 The Answer. And now, here is our host and the publisher of Generations Magazine, Percy Ihara.
Okay, and welcome back to Generations Radio. I'm Percy Ihara, your host, every Saturday from 5 to 6 and Sundays from 3 to 4 here on AM 690. And as you guys always know, you can listen to iHeartRadio. Just plug in KHNR or go to our Salem, our Generations Magazine website, generations808.com. And you can listen live and also all our past issues of Generations Radio. So welcome back every Saturday and Sunday. Today's guest, is one of the growing areas of seniors, unfortunately, which is elder abuse. And today we have our resident and columnist of Generations Magazine, Scott Spallina from the Prosecutor's Office, and also Mr. Elliot Connell from the Adult Protective Services. So welcome to the show, Elliot.
Glad to be here.
First time, huh?
First time.
Well, you first of many, I'm sure, because as you guys all know, and Scott here, adult issues and of abuse is just growing? Can you say?
Or oh, it's very much growing, and thankfully for our new department director and deputy director, we all wanted to be transparent and proactive in sharing what's happening out there in the communities.
Yeah. So, for those of you that may not know what APS or Adult Protective Services is, can you just spend a little bit of time on what you guys do, because I didn't realize you were your job is statewide.
It's a statewide operation. Our mission is basically to protect vulnerable adults from abuse, neglect, and exploitation, and also to afford them the opportunity to live in the community for as long as they can. Mm-hmm. And that's our mission.
And so, basically, when people call you guys up, there's always a problem, unfortunately.
Yes, we do have reporting lines on each island, and they are available to take in reports of abuse, neglect, exploitation, or even risk factors. And we determine eligibility as to what we can do to prevent the abuse or resolve the issues that confront the clients.
Okay. We'll give your phone number a little bit later on. But so, Scott, you're at the prosecutor's office and the elder abuse unit.
That's correct.
So you guys must see a lot of cases together or work on cases.
We see a lot of cases. However, we know there's more out there. We know that we're only grabbing the tip of the iceberg, as they say. And we get our cases primarily from HPD, the Honolulu Police Department. And we're only prosecuting those cases, but I get calls all the time, and we'll get my number out there later, from family members, from other people saying, hey, my mom doesn't want to report this to the police, or this is going on and she wants help, but she doesn't know who to turn to. And so actually, I think I've been, if Elliot has some stats, I think I'm responsible for a lot of his stats, because I give a lot of cases over to Elliot and Adult Protective Services over there.
What kind of volume are we looking at, Elliot?
Okay, well, last year, fiscal year, July 1st, 2014 to, I'm sorry, July 1st, 2013 to June 30th, 2014, we investigated 1,014 cases of abuse, neglect, or exploitation, of which 80% are 60 and older, the clients.
Wow. What do you mean by 60 and over? You take younger cases?
Yes, we take all vulnerable adults from 18 on. And the definition of a vulnerable adult is you have some kind of form of a disability, whether it be physical or emotional.
Yeah. And so this is statewide numbers?
Statewide numbers.
But these are just cases that you investigate. But you must get thousands of calls a year.
So for every case that we investigate, there may be 2 to 3 other calls that have risk elements, but it doesn't meet the statutory definition for us to investigate.
Right.
So we rely on making referrals to resources in the community.
Well, let me ask you this question, because I get this all the time when people call me. I might say, well, have you tried APS? And they say, well, I don't want to be put into a home. And so I think that's one of the stereotypes that if people even know about Adult Protective Services, they're concerned that if they call you guys, you're automatically going to like declare them incompetent and put them in a home.
No. I'm glad you raised that question, because we want to dispel the myth. We respect the right to self-determination of all our vulnerable adults. if they appear to lack capacity, we cannot take any action until the client is professionally assessed by a medical physician or a psychiatrist. And that's the only time we would be able to assist the client in having a legal guardian or someone in the family that would take legal responsibility for them. But our first mission is always to keep them in the least intrusive environment, meaning their home in the community, and not automatically look for placements.
Oh, yeah. Because like you say, I think that's a myth that people have. Yeah. Is because, as you know, seniors especially do not want to leave their home for the most part.
Oh, exactly.
That's one thing a person I've talked about off the air is trying to keep somebody like aging in place, keep them in a home, in their environment.
Of their choosing.
Of their choosing.
Right.
Very good.
Yeah.
So how do families deal with this issue? Because I've had clients call me up and say, you know, my neighbor's son is abusing the mom or dad, and they called HPD, but HPD couldn't do anything because there's no bruising. Nobody witnessed any crime. All they hear is yelling from the house. Are those kind of simple? Those are kind of some of the calls that you get as well?
Well, we would want those kind of calls because we are not a law enforcement agency. We are there to provide services for the welfare of that client.
Yeah, so you're not there to arrest anybody?
No. No, we're there to offer the client services, to offer a safe environment so they can, you know, flourish and continue on their lives.
But it's such a family issue, and like it's a society issue, like Scott was talking about. A lot of times they don't want to get anybody in trouble. You know, they're embarrassed. How do you folks deal with that?
This is why we are currently planning a motivational interviewing training session for all APS employees.
Oh, really?
Statewide. Because they do have the right to self-determination, so we respect that. So engagement, to show them that there are options other than staying in a situation. Because as Scott mentioned, they love to stay in their home. Yeah. They do not want to remove themselves from the home. And sometimes their adult children are the abusers or neglectors, and they don't want them to get into trouble. So they won't file any police reports, or nor do they want us to be involved. Our involvement is only according to their permission to be involved. If they tell us to walk away, we have to walk away. But that doesn't mean that we're going to try again to make another home visit and try to influence them to see the bigger picture, to see that there are options, that they're not captive in their own home.
Well, so it sounds like you guys are a bunch of problem solvers then.
Well, we try to be.
Yeah.
Well, that's such a societal issue these days with all the baby boomers. You know, we maybe retired or maybe laid off or fired, and they're home with mom or dad, and they're taking advantage of mom and dad. I mean, we hear these stories every day, right, Scott?
Well, yeah, and that's the whole. That's the sad part is when you have an adult child, basically financially abusing or sometimes psychologically abusing. But obviously they don't want to have their adult son or daughter arrested because they're afraid they'll go to jail, become homeless or whatever. Mm-hmm. And so those are heart-wrenching because they want the help but not to the extent of getting someone arrested. And so it sounds like Adult Protective Services offers another alternative besides the arrest avenue.
Yes, we offer that that option to work voluntarily and even engage the alleged perpetrator, which could be an adult son. And to try to, you know, reason with them saying that, you know, you're here to care for your parent. And caregiving is a very tough job.
Yes, I think we all agree on that.
I think the state lacks the training for caregivers. You know, whether they are being discharged from a hospital or whether they are just aging. You know, there's no training for family members to know how to care for their loved ones. And that's one of the reasons why we have a program of respite. So the caregiver can go out and play a game of golf or just go shopping or just, you know, go to the beach and just have their heads cleared, you know. So
wait, when you say you guys, so you're talking Adult Protective Services offers that type of service as well?
Yeah, we have a senior companion program that offers that service, and it's a fairly funded program.
Really?
Yes. So we train volunteers, 55 and older, to be companions for seniors.
That's fantastic. That's something I never knew Adult Protective Services was involved with.
Yeah, coming in our April, May issue of Generations Magazine, we're going to feature that program. It's been around a long time.
It's been around.
We've done stories on it.
The Senior Companion Program has been in Hawaii for 41 years, I believe.
Yeah. Oh, my goodness.
That's a very good program. And then the June, July issue, we're going to have the other respite program in the magazine. and respite is very much needed. I was telling these my friends just the other day about I was on a conference call, a national conference call on a kind of a long-term care stated address on long-term care in the industry, insurance industry. Mm-hmm. And it showed me a stat that was amazing. It says, if you've been a caregiver for more than 3 years, your life expectancy is going to drop by 10 years.
Wow.
Because of the struggles that you've faced, especially full-time mm-hmm. caregivers. Mm-hmm. And it's unfortunate. And for caregivers, the chance of you having a chronic mm-hmm. illness is up to 63%.
Yeah, and unfortunately, we're seeing an increase in the rise of crimes where the caregivers basically succumb to caregiver stress. And they do something they regret later on. And unfortunately, that regret may be acts of violence or neglect because not everybody – I mean, you could be the best accountant in the world. You could be the best lawyer in the world. But when you're forced to be in a caregiver situation – because as we all know, caregiving mm-hmm. is incredibly expensive. When you're forced to be in a caregiver situation mm-hmm. of a loved one, whether mm-hmm. it be your parents or wife or whomever, you're overwhelmed.
Yeah, and I think there's a bill still alive in the legislature. Part of the Kupuna package is mandating that there is caregiver training provided to the loved ones before they get discharged.
Well, that bill is still going on. AARP is backing that. We'll see whether it gets passed or not. So,
as Scott mentioned, you know, like we are investigating caregivers, loved ones, and a lot of times it's not because of their intentional doing. It's the lack of training, which may cause illnesses, bed sores, and other things. But their intentions are good. I mean, they love their parents and they want to care for them. But because of the lack of training, we get a call and we investigate and we find them, you know.
So what are some of the higher number of calls? What type of calls are you guys both getting?
Well, the highest number of calls we get is for self-neglect, where individuals neglect themselves. Their physical care.
Somebody who's calling neighbors, relatives?
Neighbors, hospitals, ERs.
Because how would a neighbor like know someone's being self-neglectful?
Well, when they go over to the home and they see the person is in a environment, a home environment that is bordering on unsanitary conditions.
Like hoarding kind?
Or? Hoarding. There's open rotting cans of food. There's feces. They are... you know, defecating on themselves.
Gosh. Oh, my gosh.
They may have medical issues, and they're not taking their medication, like diabetes, so that could result in loss of limbs, you know, all these kinds of things. And that's one of our highest populations that we get. I mean, there's a lot of seniors out there that are isolated that we don't know about. Look at all the condos that we have around.
I was just going to say condominiums.
Yeah. Oh, I mean, they're isolated if they don't have family members checking in on them.
Yeah. A family friend of ours, I mentioned this a couple months ago, a family friend of ours, I asked him to, you know, you need to get a life alert for your mom because the only daughter was living on the mainland. Well, I got a call saying mom's in a hospital, she had a stroke, and they want to discharge her this was on a Wednesday, they want to discharge her by Friday. I said, well, do you know when she had the stroke? She goes, we don't know. I said, what do you mean? Mm-hmm. We called Friday, Saturday, Sunday, nobody answered the phone.
Oh my gosh. Mm-hmm.
So she got her cousin go down and open the door. Mm-hmm. Mom had a stroke, she was in the tub. When he got there Monday morning, there were 3 days of newspapers, Friday, Saturday, Sunday on the front door. Mm-hmm. So being isolated is a huge problem. And there's got to be something that we can do for people in the condominiums. I know a few years back, they was trying to pass kind of a friendly neighbor law or something like that where the resident managers could go into the condominiums if they see the mail is backed up, if they hear, they haven't seen – you know, Elliot for 3 days. Mm-hmm. I'm wondering what happened to him.
Right.
And we knocked on the door. Nobody answered the door.
Right.
What did he do?
Well, we've had reports where after 10 days or so, then someone finally calls in saying, hey, you know, I haven't seen so-and-so, but I hear music in his room. Mm. And they finally go in and it's like 10 days later and the person expired 10 days ago.
Wow. Oh, my
God. You know, so, you know, yeah, I think there needs to be something in the various condo associations that have some kind of alert birthday. If you don't see somebody, then...
I do like presentations all around the island to various senior groups. I'm so happy to see these large numbers of seniors getting out of the home, getting out of their condos.
Right.
But again, these are the mobile ones. These are the ones that know of the services.
Right.
And that's why Percy has all a lot of the senior groups in the Generations Magazine to advertise, like, don't stay home. Don't become isolated. Mm-hmm. Because when you become isolated, things can happen.
And there's a large population of seniors. And just think of our parents. If you were to tell your parent, why don't you go down to the senior center and sign up? More likely than not, they're not going to go.
Not old.
So you're going to have to take them down there. And I tell our staff that, you know, if we do establish a case management component where we are going to be following seniors that we refer to physical ed activities, then be prepared to put on your shorts and engage in the activity for a while until they get used to, you know, and then they can start independently.
Practice the karaoke.
Yeah.
That's what you need to do.
That's what you got to do. I mean, you know, because everybody talks about a warm handoff. You cannot just make a referral and expect them to participate. You're going to have to warm hand them off.
Well, the City and County Parks and Recs has over 35 clubs on this island alone.
Yep.
Mm. And they meet almost every week except for the summer when they're babysitting the kids, when they're out in summer school. Mm. But there's over 35 clubs on every pocket community. There's a club. And so that's a great place. But so besides the neglect, you said self-neglect, what other areas do you see?
Well, the other major area is caregiver neglect. And we were just talking about that, about family members unable to provide the necessary care, which results in some kind of illness or injury. And we do have, you know, a fraction of that coming from care homes as well.
Care homes as well.
Yeah.
Are they getting? Do you get the complaints about the caregivers at the care homes?
We do, yes. So we investigate RNs, the certified nurse aides.
Right.
You know, so we investigate all complaints of neglect. It doesn't matter if it's a licensed person, unlicensed, substitute caregiver, or a family member.
So let's say that I have a family member in a care facility. Now, I was told that I had to, if I want to make a complaint, I go to the long-term care ombudsman.
You could. Okay. But you can definitely make a report to APS.
Okay, yeah, because it sounds like you guys would be more, I don't know, trying to work things out.
Yeah, we want to work things out, but we still identify a victim, which we call our clients, and an alleged perpetrator.
Right.
And we also notify the Office of Healthcare Assurances, Department of Health, and they oversee the licensing of all these facilities.
Oh, okay.
Adult residential care facilities.
So you guys are all in the same umbrella.
Well, yeah, different departments, but we are serving the same clientele in different capacities. Yeah.
Oh, very good.
But, you know, I think the public needs to know whenever they suspect someone is being abused or neglected, they can call Adult Protective Services, and we will determine whether or not they meet the definition of a vulnerable adult. Do they have capacity or not?
So a vulnerable adult means somebody that has a disability under the age of 60, though, right?
18 and older. 18 until...
Okay. But when you say vulnerable, do they have to have a disability or...
Emotional, psychological, medical disability.
Yes. And then what about just an 80-year-old that's competent and healthy, but they see abuse in the house of a son or a daughter?
There would be a criminal complaint.
So you pass it on off
right.
to HPD or...
But if we do receive the call and there are services in a community that we can identify, we'll make the referrals.
Okay.
Like each county has the elderly division.
Elderly affairs division.
Affairs division out of the counties. And so they have services. So we could refer them, you know.
Yeah, because that's one thing that a lot of people, when they call my office, they don't know really who to call. Mm-hmm. And it sounds like you would be a good initial call.
Definitely.
Because if it doesn't fit within your guys' organization,
right.
then, like you said, you can refer them out to an
Correct.
Appropriate organization.
Correct. Yeah, we won't just let it drop.
Oh, that's important.
So on a neighbor island, how is the abuse on a neighbor island? You see it more or less percentage-wise?
Compared to Oahu, definitely, yeah.
More?
Less.
Or less?
Yeah, less.
It's been more family-oriented, but you do see that out there as well.
Oh, definitely, yes. Yeah. I mean, there are less care homes out there, so, you know, that percentage is lower. But, you know, I mean, we have aging populations across the state, so a lot of caregiver neglect, self-neglect, and there's physical abuse as well, where there are evidence of injuries. Physical injuries.
Yeah. And what percentage do you think are of the abuses financial?
I don't have
to. Do you get much of those?
Well, it's growing because the state legislature passed a law a couple of years ago making all financial institutions mandated reporters of 62 and older clients. Yeah. So it is rising. And plus, you know, there was a media campaign. Mm-hmm. Is this for real? So that kind of, you know, made the public more aware as there is such a thing as financial exploitation. Mm. So, yeah.
And I noticed on your pamphlet here that you mm-hmm. brought here, you have two locations for the Big Island. And only one on Maui and one on Kauai. Is it because it's so spread out?
No, I mean, it's the counties. So, like, East Hawaii is one county, West Hawaii is another county. Uh-huh. And Maui County covers Lanai and Molokai.
Right.
Now, mm-hmm. so you have offices. So do you expect people to go to your offices, or are they just call and you come to them?
Well, when we're initiating an investigation, we don't make appointments. You know, we make unannounced home visits.
Okay.
Yeah, to see the client as well as the alleged perpetrator.
Now, do you take anonymous calls?
Yes, we do.
Okay, because I know that's one thing that neighbors don't want to, like, have their neighbors know they called or whatever like that. But then I know that's for criminal cases. A lot of mm-hmm. people don't want to call the police, mm-hmm. but it sounds to me like mm-hmm. it's more okay to call you guys.
Well, they can call us, but we do tell the neighbors, for example, saying that because you are giving detailed observations of what mm-hmm. you witnessed, the alleged perpetrator might know who.
Like, might figure them out.
Might figure them out, but we will not divulge the name under any circumstances of the reporter.
Oh, excellent.
Yeah.
Okay, then that's good to know, because then that, I think, helps people get more involved.
Right. And we do ask the reporter if they would like their names to be released to other service providers. It's their option.
Right.
But we will never, APS will never divulge the name of the reporter.
Oh, excellent. Yeah. Okay. And that's good. So they would not then go down to make a complaint in person. They can still make the complaint on the telephone.
On the telephone, letter, text, email.
And is it one number for all islands?
No, each island has their own specific number.
Okay.
Yeah.
So actually, what I'm doing on my phone, I'm taking a picture of the back of the brochure with all the phone numbers. That's the best way, so I can always have it handy.
Right.
Oh, very good.
It's the newest thing that I've learned with my technology is take a picture. Don't ask me. Don't
laugh.
Look at
that. Yeah. Okay.
Right. Take a picture of it.
Well, okay, before the program ends, we're going to go through each one of those numbers. We're going to do it slowly because I don't have a fancy, expensive phone like Percy, so I'm going to have to write all this stuff down here.
And those people out there that have a computer, they can log on to the State of Hawaii Department of Human Services website, and under Adult Protective Services, they have those numbers, those contact numbers.
But you said they can send an email to somebody, a reporter?
They could. We have a general email box.
Oh, yeah?
Yeah.
Do you get a lot of emails, though?
Well, no. Mostly it's telephone calls, faxes. Mm-hmm.
Faxes?
Yeah.
Really?
Yeah.
They still have faxes.
I was telling somebody, I haven't used a fax in over 5 years.
Oh.
Oh, my gosh. That is old school.
So, before we take our break, we just want to get people to understand. So Adult Protective Services here, your office is the main office, but you said sometime in 2016 you're going to switch over to a one central area, right?
We're looking at centralizing statewide all intake reports.
So on every island, there's an investigator or investigators?
Yes, each island has a complementary of investigative staff.
And on Oahu, how many investigators do you have?
We have 9.
Wow.
Now, you say investigative, but it sounds like you guys do a lot of, like, social work kind of stuff.
Well, their title is social worker, but people kind of identify them as investigators, but they're social workers.
Yeah, because it sounds like they wear more than one hat.
Well, I mean, you know, at the same time, you're trying to empower the family to address the needs of the client in question. We're not punitive.
Okay.
You know, we're not saying that because you neglected your loved one, we're going to do this or that. We have no punishment or consequences. We just want to improve the situation and get their buy-in because they want to continue to care for their loved ones. So we want to give them the training, the resources to do that.
Yeah, it sounds like the most non-confrontational way to resolve the problem is possible then.
Oh, of course, yes. It's strictly, everything is voluntary, so we need to engage them.
So I have to get you involved with the Mediation Center of the Pacific.
Well, that is one agency, as well as EPEC Ohana Conferencing. That's an agency that kind of focuses mostly on children right now, but we're thinking about leveraging that
The mediation process.
Yeah. And have the family be empowered to figure out what's in the best interest of, you know.
Well, as you know, when you're investigating investigation, it's always not in the best interest of the senior.
Well, but that is our mission.
Right.
So
if
we find that the family members are not putting the client first or being client focused, then we need to try and engage the client to show them that there are other options, that you're not locked into the one option that your caregiver is wanting to pursue.
Yeah, unfortunately, that's what the problem is. It's not in the best interest of the senior.
Right.
Yeah.
So it's easier when a client is assessed, medically assessed to lack capacity. Then we have the courts to go to. And so we would file either an order for immediate protection and subsequently with a legal guardianship.
And this would be for a lot of your self-neglect kind of cases?
If they lack capacity, that's the key, that they cannot make decisions for their daily living and survival.
So that's when if they don't have a family member, then they refer them over to the Office of Public Guardian?
We would file a petition in court.
Yeah.
If they have no one stepping up to be the guardian, then we do.
You do the filing?
Yeah, we do the filing, and we recommend that the Office of Public Guardian become the guardian. A lot of people don't know that hospitals, other state departments, Department of Health, they have the authority to file for legal guardianships. So they themselves can do that.
And that sounds like it'd be a last resort kind of thing.
Yeah, right. The person lacks capacity and there's no one else to take care of them, or they refuse to have someone take over their affairs. Mm. But the key is the lack of capacity. Yeah.
Well, we're here with Elliot Connell from the Adult Protective Services. Elliot, which number would you like to give out at this time? We're going to take a short break shortly, but what number do you want to give out?
For myself or for our...
I guess for your department. We'll mention the neighbor island later on.
Okay, for Oahu, if you have a concern of a vulnerable adult 18 and older who has some form of a disability, you may call our Oahu section. Their number is 832-5115.
Okay, and then Scott, again, your office of the prosecutor's office, your number again?
Is 768-6452.
Okay. And both of you, thank you so much, but we're going to take a short break. We're going to come back in the second part to really talk about the process. When somebody calls in, what can they expect? Just kind of walk people through, because a lot of times they don't know who you folks are. I didn't know you really just investigate. You don't really have any powers to arrest anybody as well. So
correct.
Want to cover all that. We'll be right back after a short break.
We will be right back with Percy Ihara from Generations Radio. If you have any questions or want to be part of our discussion, give us a call at 296-5467. That's 296-5467. This is Generations Radio on AM 690, The Answer.
Over 10 years ago, the Plaza opened their first assisted living facility to serve the growing need of Hawaii's senior community. Since then, they've made it possible for thousands of families to stay connected with their loved ones in a true home away from home setting. Now, a decade later, there are more reasons than ever why Hawaii seniors and their loved ones choose the Plaza Assisted Living. Maybe it's the flexibility of monthly rental apartment living, or the comfort of knowing that the Plaza offers independent and assisted living, memory care, even short-term respite care. Options to serve each resident's individual needs. What's reason number one? The Plaza Assisted Living feels like home. And they're going to be opening the newest plaza in Pearl City very soon. You could make your deposit today. Come, see for yourself. Call and schedule a free tour at 377-5292. That's 377-5292. Or visit us online at theplazaassistedliving.com. Theplazaassistedliving.com.
Simplify your life by opening a My Social Security account. What's My Social Security? It's a secure online account that allows you immediate access to your personal Social Security information. During your working years, you can use My Social Security to view your Social Security statement, to check your earnings record and see estimates of the future retirement, disability, and survivor benefits you and your family may receive. If you receive benefits, you can get a benefit verification, check your benefit and payment information, change your address and phone number, and even change your direct deposit information. Open a My Social Security account today and simplify your life. Just visit www.socialsecurity.gov/myaccount. While you're online, check out all the other things you can do at www.socialsecurity.gov.
Today, more than ever, we local people are living longer than any other state in the union, with more seniors, baby boomers, and caregivers. Generations Radio promotes the importance to be proactive as we all age. The radio team will focus on issues facing our seniors and their families, finding resources to navigate healthy aging along with financial, legal, and caregiving information. So join Percy E. Howard from 5 until 6 each Saturday, right here on AM 690, The Answer. Focusing on the issues facing our seniors and their families today. Here's our Generations Radio host, Percy Ihara.
Welcome back. I'm Percy Ihara, your host of Generations Radio, here every Saturday from 5 to 6, on Sundays from 3 to 4. I did want to mention that Arthritis Foundation and the Hawaii Pacific Health is having a free workshop on March 21st. From 8:30 to 12 at Ala Moana Hotel. It's Getting a Grip on Arthritis. And so if you have arthritis or have a family member that has arthritis, it's a free event. You will have to go down to one of the Hawaii Pacific Health's facilities to register. It's a great event. And if you can't go down to Ala Moana Hotel, they are going to have a live stream from each of the hospitals, Straub, Palimomi, and Queen Kapilani. So I'm sorry, Kapilani Children's Hospital. So check that out, and it's March 21st at the Ala Moana Hotel, 8:30 to 12. As well, in April, we have the, and it's on the bottom pages of this of the Generations magazine. I'm looking for it right now. On April 8th, Wednesday, is Kupuna Power Day at the State Capitol at the Rotunda, and there'll be speakers and exhibitors there and live music with Marlene Tsai. I think you're going to have Jimmy Borges and then, of course, Brickwood Galateria. That's April 8th, Wednesday, from 9 a.m. to 11:30 at the Capitol, State Capitol Rotunda. And, of course, you mark down this date, August 15th, which is a Saturday at Ala Moana Hotel, is our 9th annual Aging in Place workshop. We'll probably have over 70 exhibitors and over 18 speakers presentations in the morning, and then we'll repeat it in the afternoon. So that runs from 8 o'clock to 2:45 at the Ala Moana Hotel, Saturday, August 15th this year. And it's our 9th year doing that. So stay tuned for more calendar of events. But anyway, we're here with Elliot Connell from the Adult Protective Services and Scott Spolina from the Prosecutor's Office. Elliot, thanks again for coming in. And I wanted to try and give families a little bit of idea why they need to call you guys up, because obviously if it's a crime is committed, it's going to go to the prosecutor's office and probably going to drop on Scott Spolina's desk. But what can families do? And, you know, obviously you're not going to arrest anybody, but you just investigate. But what are some of the things that you can see that can help the families or so they don't get to the point where they end up on Scott's desk?
Well, I think it's important for any individual out there believing or suspecting that someone is being abused to either call the police or call Adult Protective Services. We don't want them to make the decision that someone is being abused or neglected or exploited. Let the professionals do that. So if they were to call Adult Protective Services, the phone will be answered by an intake social worker who would ask the identity of the client that they're concerned about, any demographic information, any observations that they've seen, anything that they've heard, you know, yelling, screaming, or anything that can identify why they believe someone is being abused. And some of them may actually see the injuries on the person, and the person may have told them that I got these injuries from my caregiver. It could be a loved one or a licensed care provider. So we would just have a conversation with them. It's not a grilling kind of a conversation. It's saying name of the client, who is believed to be the person responsible for causing the abuse or neglect, any identifying information, and the intake social worker will make an assessment of the information that's provided and determine, according to our statutory laws, whether or not the client meets the definition of a vulnerable adult. If so, the case will be assigned to an investigative social worker who would go out into the field unannounced and interview the client, the alleged perpetrator, and any other witnesses to
the
event.
Did you say unannounced?
Unannounced. I mean, like, for example, if we had a call on caregiver neglect and it's a hoarding situation or the home is in a condition where someone believes it could be unsanitary, we don't want to call the alleged perpetrator and say, hey, I want to make an appointment, because by the time you get out to the house, you'll probably be cleaned.
Right.
But that is, you know,
I'm glad to hear that. That's the reason why.
Yeah. And that's an improvement. Okay. I mean, just the fact that if we did call, which we shouldn't be calling, and they clean the house, well, that's an improvement for the client.
That's true, you know what I'm saying? But that's more temporary, though, right?
Temporary. So, yeah, so all of our intervention services are unannounced.
Okay, so when you're talking about report, this is the family member, concerned neighbor calling you. So they're not writing a report for you guys.
No. They will just have a conversation with the intake social worker. The intake social worker will be documenting what is being conversed.
Just a telephone conversation.
Yeah, telephone conversation. Correct.
Very good.
Correct.
Now, sometimes I have called, and you guys must be extremely busy because I get the answering machine. Does that mean that you guys are full up? You're not taking any more cases?
That means the available social workers on the reporting line are on another call. So any subsequent calls will come into and goes directly to a voice answering machine, which is checked hourly.
Hourly. That's true, because you guys have always called me back when I've left a message on the voicemail.
Right. But, you know, we do see that as a possible gap, because people might have a change of heart in wanting to call back again if they didn't leave a message or they want to be anonymous. Mm. So this is why we are hoping to have a full complement of resources. So there will be no calls that would be left on the answering machine. That there will be staff available to pick up every call.
Yeah. And unfortunately, the weekends, you're not open on weekends. So
we're not open on weekends and holidays, but that is something that we're looking at, because abuse neglect doesn't occur 7:45 to 4:30 Monday to Friday. So we understand that.
Do you have like an insider tip on when would be a good day of the week to call or a good time to call?
7:45 to 4:30 is the best time to call. we are trying to be as receptive and responsive as possible.
Well, the reason why I say unannounced is that for the long-term care ombudsman office, when there was a report sent in to them about a nursing facility or a care home, they have their visits are announced. Mm. It cannot be unannounced. And that's one thing that we've been trying to, the senior community has been trying to fight that law, and it's never been passed yet.
Well, I mean, how does John McDermott feel about that, who is our long-term?
He hates it in the sense that he has to give either, I forgot, was it 24, 48 hours to do a surprise inspection on a care facility.
We might be out there before he ever gets out
there. That's what it sounds like. Maybe you guys should, Johnny, on the spot.
Maybe we're going to be. And I know we talked a lot about caregivers. I mean, do you see a lot of your, besides neglect, you said that was number one, do you see a lot of complaints with the caregivers?
Yes, that is our second highest percentage of reports we receive.
And you say family caregivers and for care homes?
Right.
And I can attest to that, because some of the cases we have had, which unfortunately has resulted in like injuries like the bed sores and stuff like that, have been in care facilities that, I mean, they're trying to make money. So they may hire somebody that maybe does not have the degree or does not have the training or maybe a family member they bring in from some other place to help run the place. And those people aren't trained.
Right.
And so if, let's say, I were to bring my father-in-law or mother-in-law into one of these facilities, I'm only going to meet the head person. I'm not going to meet all their staff.
Right.
And that staff may be untrained.
And there is a law that they are to be certified. You know, substitute caregivers cannot just be given the title. You know, they have to have some kind of training.
Yeah, they have to have get certified.
Right, and each of these care homes come under the supervision of a case management agency, which is usually someone with an RN degree, a registered nurse, and they're supposed to be making visits to the home to ensure that the licensing procedures and policies are being, you know, followed. And the Office of Healthcare Assurances, the Department of Health, also oversees. So they conduct investigations in terms of violations of the facility not following the protocols. So a lot of our cases of caregiver neglect in facilities is when loved ones go and visit.
Right.
Well, that's one thing that we always say is if you have a loved one in any sort of home, whether it be a care home, facility, whatever that, visit often.
Correct.
Visit often.
Yeah. Right. I noticed in your brochure you have physical abuse, psychological abuse, sexual abuse, caregiver neglect, self-neglect, and financial exploitation. Do you see a rise in all of these areas?
It fluctuates, you know, and again, it's our responsibility to go out and do in-service trainings, and all of our sections do that. They go to healthcare plans, they go to nursing homes, these private assisted living facilities like Plaza, 15 Craigside. They go out and educate, you know, everyone about abuse, neglect, and exploitation.
Now, in handling all those, because I know that when I first started the elder abuse unit at the prosecutor's office in 2008, there's a steep learning curve for me. My background was violent crimes, and so I had to learn the financial aspect of it. Do you have specially trained staff that can, like, maybe do a financial investigation, or how do you wear so many hats when investigating these cases?
We do have a financial auditor position.
Oh, very good.
That they are, skilled in looking at finances. We are looking at increasing or advancing that position or getting more position in more forensic looking into records. I mean, you know, someone can look at a record and see that, you know, there's some withdrawals, but, you know, you really can't say that those withdrawals were, you know, for the wrong reasons.
Right.
But it's a clue. So we're trying to, you know, increase our staff in terms of the financial side because it is increasing. And we only have one financial auditor position, and that position is, you know, tasked with providing consults, if necessary, to the neighbor islands.
Now, recently, I was told that the law changed so that you guys would get more cases. Does that mean that you got more staff as well?
No staffing increase. In 2009, the state of Hawaii underwent a RIF, a reduction in force. Adult Protective Services statewide lost approximately 25% of its workforce.
And you got that back?
No, we never got it back. In addition to that, my position was eliminated. So there was no head to the Hawaii Adult Protective Services
system.
There was no head?
Really? No head.
So what happened was we took a support service position to recreate my position. So then again, we took positions from within to create essential positions needed to run the branch.
Wow.
So we did that several times. We don't have anything. We have some. The Kupuna Caucus put in a package to increase APS in terms of a workforce, but you know we don't know how that's going to go.
Well, hopefully they will. I mean, how is the new governor supporting you as well? We're going to need Governor Ige to support you.
Right. I mean, everyone understands that our aging population is increasing. And we were tasked in 2013 to assess and evaluate ourselves. And we had the University of Hawaii Center on Aging contracted, and they assessed and evaluated our services as well as looked at the 49 other states in terms of what the APS systems are. So they came up with some strong recommendations. And the first recommendation was to centralize the intake function into one locale. So we have consistent, prompt response to concerns.
That's good because, we're so unique because of the islands and the distance and the travel.
Correct.
I'm going to Molokai tomorrow and, you know, Hawaiian Airlines, you know, there's limited airline flights to the Molokai. I didn't realize that, you know.
True.
And then, you know, I don't even know if there's a rental car place over there. So actually, I look at my friends picking me up, you know. But what other recommendations do they have? Because I know you can do that in 2016, hopefully. That'll get done.
Right.
Right. What other things do they saw that other states are doing? Then?
Well, you know, because there is no one national department that oversees adult protective services, unlike child welfare. You know, we nationwide are doing what you think is best. There is a National Adult Protective Services Association, which is a voluntary organization that wanted to pull all the states together and to see what everybody is doing and try to assess and determine what is the best practice for adult protective services.
Well, it sounds like that gives you the flexibility, though, to kind of shape the adult protective services to fit Hawaii's needs.
Exactly. We're not mandated or being forced to make changes, but, you know, it's incumbent upon us to recognize that change advancement in APS needs to occur. We cannot continue as is and expect to be able to meet the needs that we anticipate.
Well, like you said, I mean, you get aging, Department
Center
of Aging.
Center on Aging.
Mm-hmm. Getting recommendations. Right. And so it does not sound like you guys are resting on your laurels.
No, we're not.
You're trying to do this for the next century.
And we are currently having a work group develop a training curriculum for APS workers. You know,
so, I know I went there about when David Tanaka was there about,
five, six years ago.
And I did a training on mortgages and the reverse mortgages and title issues and power attorney issues, because a lot of times people don't not aware some of these issues going on. People are trying to change a power attorney or using a power attorney when mom already has Alzheimer's or getting her to sign a new one. But we're just seeing more and more of the issues like this out there.
Right.
Well, and since you've come aboard, I mean, we have already been involved in one coalition, the Bankers Financial Fraud Coalition. Is this for real coalition?
Correct.
And that's something that I see you guys making the effort to get more into the community and raise awareness of your guys' mission.
And that's one of the recommendations from the Center on Aging's evaluation, is that we need to partnership out there. We cannot expect to do everything by ourselves.
Yeah, and that's I'm glad to hear that.
Well, especially the people just know who they can call.
Correct.
Like I said, we're all about being proactive and having resources out there. We might have to have you come and speak at our Aging in Place event, August 15th.
If need be.
If you're not golfing Saturday.
I want him at the Good Life Expo and some of the expos with a table there.
Sure.
3 days.
Sure.
That'd be good. And the Aging in Place, of course.
I'm for all, you know, just getting the word out.
So when a case comes in, you investigate and you find there's an abuse, what happens then?
It's an allegation that comes in first. An investigator will go out, social will go out and assess what's on the report. You may find other things. The report may have come in for physical abuse, but then when the investigator's out there, they find that there's financial exploitation, there might be self-neglect issues. So there's a whole host of other things going on.
Yeah,
I know.
You know, but the main focus is the client. You know, because we're not there to get the perpetrator. We want the perpetrator, if the victim or the client wants the perpetrator to remain in their lives, to try to find the resolution to how the caregiver can provide a safe environment and ensure the well-being of the client, and the client will be happy because everything is about the client.
Yeah, it sounds like you guys are not going in there like with blinders on. You're like keeping like a clear vision of what's best for the client.
Exactly.
Yeah. That's good. That's good. Because sometimes, I guess, when the police are called, they're looking for the crime. They're looking for the suspect like that. You guys are looking at the entire situation.
Correct. And there are times when, you know, our workers go to the door and they refuse entry by the caregiver. But the allegations in the report sounds like we need to see the client. So they will step off the doorstep, go to the curb, call 911 and have a beat officer come.
Like a welfare check.
And enter the residence, But then again, we still need to engage the client and get the client's permission to proceed with our inquiry, our intervention.
So it really says an investigation, they find physical abuse.
Right.
But mom doesn't want to prosecute or just because the son lives with her and doesn't want to get the son in trouble or get put in jail, what happens then?
We tell the client, because we saw the injuries and we heard that you may have said your son caused them, we are required to make a police report. So we'll let the client know that we have to call the police.
It's mandatory.
Yeah, if we see something, we do. Yeah.
No, I like how you call them the client because it sounds like you're working for them.
Yeah, it's not a victim. You know, it's not. Yeah. I mean, that's not what I want to get out.
It's
to
like
the
they're
public.
In control. It sounds like they're still in the control of the situation.
Yeah. So you know, I mean, they are clients, and if they're in the facility, you know, we like to address them as patients.
Very good.
You know.
So like I said, one of the things we want to do, and you're a great resource in your office of APS, but what can families do to avoid these kind of issues? Do you talk about those kind of things as well?
Well, you know, resources, you know, have conversations with the physicians if they're involved. If they have other service providers, you know, be actively involved. Don't just listen and do as they say. You know, and our culture sometimes don't want to ask a lot of questions. They just do as told.
Yeah.
So we're there to help them if they are willing to allow us to assist them by, you know, being a spokesperson for them and inquiring on their behalf. I mean, we're there for the client. Whatever the client would want us to do, then we could do that.
Well, that's good. I like how you emphasize the resources, knowing the resources, because I'm still, even though I've been doing this since 2008, I'm still learning a lot of the resources out there. And so I can only imagine somebody that's not as mobile as me or not like this is my full-time job. They don't know that there's resources out there for their particular situation.
And they can call us for, you know, we're calling the Adult Protective Services reporting line. It doesn't have to be only because you want to make a report. You can say, hey, you know, I'm looking for some services for my mom or dad.
That's good to know.
You know, so it's not a call making a report. It's a call inquiring about services. If we don't have the services or we know of the services, we will give them like the, you know, the County Elderly Affairs Division.
Okay.
You know, call maybe the Better Business Bureau hotline, so to speak. You know, so there are numbers that we can refer people to because we are slowly trying to gather all of the resources out there, but it's hard.
Right.
And each island has their own complementary resources.
I mean, I'm involved in a magazine. We have a whole list of resources, but I mean, there's more I'm learning about every day, you know.
Right.
But anyway, I did want to give out the number for sort of Oahu. It's 832-5115, and it's Adult Protective Services under the Department of Human Services. On Kauai, it's 241-3337. Maui, Lanai, it's 243-5151. Molokai, 553-1763. Kau, Kona, Kohala, Kamuela, 327-6280. And Hilo, Hamakua, Puna, it's 933-8820. So, Elliot Connell, thank you very much for providing this information, and we'll definitely get you more out. And thanks for being a resource, a major resource.
Yeah, I learned a lot.
Pleased to be here.
Scott Spallina, your phone number again?
Is 768-6452. Yeah.
And so thank you both. Like I said, coming up next in August is our Aging in Place, our ninth annual Aging in Place event at the Ala Moana Hotel, 8 o'clock to 2:45. And as you guys know, we are now on Facebook, LinkedIn, and Twitter. So you can go to our website, generations808.com, and like us, I guess, on your Facebook. That's a new thing, guys.
Gotta be liked.
I mean, personally.
I didn't even know. I'm just learning social media stuff. And so I'm actually having a social media class tomorrow morning from a mainland company to teach me about this kind of stuff. But it's interesting. So you got to ask people to like your page.
Yes.
Oh, I didn't know that. Go to our website, or you can go to Facebook, Generations Magazine, and like us there. But thanks again to these both gentlemen. Like I said, you can listen to us on generations808.com or go to iHeartRadio or actually Salem Media, khnr.com, and you can listen to it live. But the website, our generation website, has all the archived radio shows from the past, so you can take a look at those. So thank you so much. Everybody have a great weekend. And aloha and live well.
Thank you.